Securities and Advisory Services through Independent Financial Group, LLC, a registered broker-dealer and investment advisor member, FINRA SIPC.
Dennis O'Brien, president of O'Brien Retirement Investment Group, with the Retirement Life and Investing Show, with a very special guest today, Dr. Linda Vogel, a psychologist. Did I say it right?
You did.
Thanks, Linda, for coming on today. I appreciate it. And I want to, she's going to analyze me on the air today.
I am not.
what did Freud say? He said the Irish cannot be psychoanalyzed?
I don't know, but he probably is correct. That's not a quote I know.
I heard he read it. And, of course, I was very interested in it right away because I was like, yeah, some of my relatives, you wouldn't want you. You could write books on, I think, you know, and everything else. But thanks for coming on. I really appreciate it.
It's fun to be here.
Yeah, Linda and I have been friends for years, and I think we genuinely like each other, and we have a good time when we get chatting and, you know, just talking about things and whatnot. I'm going to talk about some boring financial stuff before we get into analyzing.
Anything else.
Anything else, stuff like that. Well, welcome to the Retirement Life and Investing Show here on News Radio 94.9 FM. We have a great show today with Linda Vogel, who you already met. But first, let's talk about the markets a little bit. What is going on? Well, something happened this week that we have not seen in a very long time. The yield curve inverted, which means the short end, the two-year, is yielding more than the 4 to 5 year, but less than a 10-year. So what? Who cares? Well, it's a real big deal if you're in the marketplace, okay? Because this is very important, because the Federal Reserve has made a huge mistake, like I've said on previous shows. The last rate increase 4 weeks before the midterm elections, to me, was a giant mistake, and I called them out on it when they did it. And I said a bad word. I think I called them idiots. And that wasn't very nice, but I was mad at them. I think it's okay to say that, but in any case, when the short rates go higher than the long rates, it tells you that the Fed needs to cut rates, not raise them. Uh-huh. Their excuse to raising rates, saying it's a normalization. This is Fed speak. This is Washington bureaucracy speak, okay? This is a normalization of rates. So later, they can cut the rates. And it's BS. Uh-huh. This is not normalization. We have $22 billion in national debt. The raising of rates will blow the federal budget and interest costs alone if they're not careful. The other reason for treating this different than normalization is a little technical, but stay with me. Since 2009, the Fed has paid banks not to lend out money, but instead leave money on deposit with the Fed, paying them a small interest rate. The Fed used that money to buy the distressed asset loans, and for years earned a tidy profit between the rates of the distressed debt that they were earning, you know, maybe 6, 7, 8%, they were paying the banks to keep the money there at 0.5%, and they were sending a big check to the Treasury every year on the difference on the profit they were making, okay? Which is a little bit of a conflict of interest, don't you think? Okay? Now, here's the tricky part, okay? The M1 money multiplier is something that they measure. When banks lend money out, it circulates and circulates, and a dollar becomes $1.50 or $2. It just circulates through the economy. I lend you money for a car. The mechanic at the car dealership goes buy something, and then that storekeeper buys something, and that's called money multiplier. It goes through the system, okay? All right? But when the Fed made the banks keep all the money on deposit with them, the banks couldn't lend money out. So the M1 money multiplier has been below zero for 9 years. And that's why we had very low rates, okay? And that's why we never really had an economy. I think under Obama, the average GDP growth was 1.8, which is very anemic, okay? All right. So basically now, the money, they've loosened the rules on the banks under $250 billion. They said, all right, you can lend out more and everything else. So the banks were starting to lend. Economy's starting to pick up. The M1 money multiplier for the first time in 9 years went over 1.0, went to 1.06, which is ineligible, okay? Because back in the 90s, it was 1.5, 1.8, 2.0. It was moving through the system, okay? So the first time we've got a little bit of lending, a little bit of velocity going on with money through the country, okay, the Fed raises the rates and keeps raising the rates, and it really tightened up because it's an already tight lending, which means millions of families cannot afford to buy houses and buy cars, okay?
Because the interest rates are high.
Because the interest rates, because at 3%, you know, you got a certain number, but if you go to 5% on the mortgage rates, which the banks are needing now to get in order to pay for the money they've got to buy from the Fed, so that's how it works. So that's how they tighten everything. All right. Now, here's the other reason, and this is pure me, my thinking and whatnot, okay? The other reason the Fed moves were disastrous is because the trade fight with the Chinese was going on at the same time, which is very deflationary. It's very anti-business development, okay? If you raise our rates, our currency goes up, and the Chinese currency goes down, which hurts any tariffs or any leverage we have against them. If they devalue their currency by 10% and you put a 10% tariff on something, it means nothing because now their goods are 10% cheaper, and plus the tariff put on, it's back where it was. So the Fed has actually been undercutting us in our fight with the Chinese to bring fairness to the international trade system. Okay? Now, our president, I call him Donald the Disruptor, cannot fight the Chinese and the Fed at the same time. You like that one? So foreigners buy our debt because it yields more, and the taxpayers are on the hook to pay more for this interest rate because the Fed raised the rates. And the Chinese sit back and laugh because we're shooting ourselves in the foot. But nowhere do you read any of this. The Swiss are just shaking their heads. I got a couple of friends over there. They're just shaking their heads. I said, they never make a move, the Swiss, until they're all in the room and work it out together, right? So they're looking at us going, you got one crazy country. And I go, oh, tell me about it. You don't drive around Mystic in the summertime. So anyway, that's where we're at. When we come back, we're going to talk no more boring economic stuff. Well, maybe a little bit more boring economic stuff. But we'll talk to Dr. Linda Vogel about the holidays, family, stress, spending, money, and all that fun stuff on the break. If you like my retirement 10 commandments, which number 2 says no more debt in your 60s after you retire, pay down all your debts, please go to dobryan at ifgrr.com or go to obryanretire.com, and we'll more than happy hit the magic button. I'll send it to you. And if you want an appointment at the same time, go right on ahead. But we'll back after that, and we'll talk about more good stuff and what's going on out there. But the one more thing I want to say before we go, I thought the bear market would come when oil went over $100 a barrel and interest rates drove dramatically. Well, oil has crashed down to 50, and now interest rates are starting to go down. Both developments are very, very bullish. The Chinese will eventually come to the table when the Fed backs off. Our dollar goes back down and tariffs cannot be devalued away. It's coming. Are you listening, Federal Reserve Powell? Please, please, for the love of God, listen. Anyway, we'll be back in a few minutes, and thank you for listening to the Retirement Life and Investing Show on 94.9 FM. Thank you. Retirement Life and Investing Show. Dickie Betts and the Allman Brothers Band. Number one song in 1973. Linda, what were you doing in 1973?
In 1973, I was living in France. And I remember the song, but I would not have known who sang it.
Was it because of the wine? Or
no, because they didn't play it over there.
I remember in 19... When did Nixon resign? In 74?
74, 76?
No, 74, I think, because Ford came
in. I know,
in.
It was in...
And then Carter got elected in 76, right?
Right, 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 right.
I was born in 57. So what was I? 17 and 74. All these old Irish. Whole month of August, I'm in Ireland with my grandmother on her farm in Roscommon visiting. All these old Irish farmers walking up to me go, oh, what do you think of Nixon resigning?
And you said what?
I'm 17, and I'm like, oh, not surprised. They've been going after him for a year, you know, and everything else. And they're asking me, like, I had some special insight, you know, but I was just clueless at the time. But thanks for coming on. I really appreciate it.
I'm happy to be here.
Yeah. So it's holiday season,
it's
Christmas,
holiday
Hanukkah.
Season.
Everybody's
New Year's coming up. Yes.
Going crazy and every. Yeah. I just any insights you want to give our listeners about how to handle the holidays with family and money and
all of that,
all that crazy stuff.
Well, we could talk a little bit, since this is a financial show, just for a brief segue into one of the stresses in the season is overspending or feeling obliged that you have to buy your kids everything that you see in the on the market or online, and just really being pressured to make a Christmas big and beautiful. And people do get into trouble, as you probably know, Dennis.
Yeah.
And so one suggestion I have, I mean, it's easy to say and not so easy to do, is if you just figure out how much you want or can spend over the holidays, and then kind of make a list of the people you want to give gifts to and the people you feel obligated to give gifts to.
Right.
And then kind of figure out how much you would spend per person, and it's going to differ.
Right.
So you'll spend more on a spouse than maybe you would on a neighbor.
Right.
And then when you're shopping, really make an effort to stay within what you've planned.
Right.
So, and especially with our children, because there's always that one last little thing that you see in the store that, oh, they would love it.
Yeah.
And at the end of the holiday season or early in January when the credit card bills come in, it can be really overwhelming.
Do you believe in cash envelopes or just use the credit card?
No. If people could use cash and avoid using credit cards, that would be the way
to go. The way to go.
Clearly, because the if you're using cash that you have and you determine that you're not going to spend more than you have in your envelope. So let's say you have an envelope, Christmas presents for my son, and it's X amount of money, and you do not spend more than the cash in the envelope.
Right, because you feel like you're spending cash instead of debit or credit card.
And you see it going. Okay.
That's pretty emotional.
So when you take, I mean, when I take my $20 bill out and hand it over, I'm much more conscious of it than when it goes on my plastic.
Yeah.
And I just think it requires some thoughtfulness. I don't care what your socioeconomic status is, whether you're, you know, wherever you are on that ladder, you might want to pay attention to what you really want to do and what you'll feel good about.
Right.
Because the whole issue of gift giving is should be done with love and joy and maybe sometimes an obligation, but still with some peace of mind.
Exactly.
So if you can have an outline in your mind as to what you want to spend in general, overall, and how much you might want to spend on each given person, you may feel happier come January, especially if you've used cash. But if you can't use cash, because you just don't have that kind of liquid cash, try to be aware of buying things on your credit card, because the interest rates you'll be paying,
right?
I don't know what the current interest rate on a normal card is, but I'm sure it's gone up.
Yeah, it can be anywhere from 9 to 29, depending on your credit rating.
Right. So you buy a $25 gift, and it takes you four or five. And you buy 10 $25 gifts.
Yeah.
So now you've got $250, and now you can't pay it off at once.
Yeah.
And you're paying 10% interest and then by June. And then, of course, you add to your credit card.
Exactly.
So
exactly.
I'm just saying it's one way to help reduce holiday stress.
Yeah.
Would be to be mindful or more aware of what you can do reasonably.
Right, exactly.
And if it's less than your neighbor, so what?
Yeah.
In a month or two, nobody will notice that you spent less than somebody else.
How about 6 hours later? Nobody cares.
Yeah.
You know, it's a thought behind it and everything else. I'm a big believer in gifting books.
Yeah.
Gift cards
for people that you don't know what they want.
Pajamas, all that stuff. Do you know that I read a stat, and I don't know if it's accurate because it's in the media, so you just don't know. But they said 28% of people haven't paid off last year's credit card bills.
I don't know the statistics, but I'm not surprised.
You're not surprised.
No. Yeah. Especially if, because it's, you know, we are pushed by the market to buy.
Yeah.
And there's the whole impulse thing that everybody, you know, any of us can give in to a spur of the moment. Oh, it looks so beautiful. I just have to get it.
Right.
And then we keep doing that.
Yeah. And it's so easy on Amazon, too.
Oh, and on Amazon, so, just clicks, add click, to the cart.
Click, add to the cart. There it is, 2 or 3 days later. And you go, all right, now.
And the only one who's really happy are the merchants and the sellers. But no, it's not true. I mean, some gifts that we give people will be cherished forever.
Right.
But especially with kids, a lot of the gifts that are current and they have to have this year, by next year, they won't be using it or caring anymore, especially for the littler kids.
Yeah. I think my parents still regret getting me that chemistry set at 10 years old.
Why did you blow up the house?
Well, we made a rotten egg bomb.
Actually.
And thankfully it went off outside, but it was, my father was like, that's a fine lad. Good job.
Good job. Do they still make chemistry sets?
I don't know. They're probably illegal because somebody sued, right?
It was one of my favorite gifts as a kid. I remember my chemistry set. I did not make a rotten egg.
You didn't make a rotten egg?
No, I did bubbly stuff in the little...
Oh, you did girly stuff. Yeah,
No gender bias.
Oh, that's right. We're not allowed to say that. I forgot. Oh, my God almighty. But anyway, you know...
So rotten eggs are boy stuff?
Well, these days, who knows, right? My granddaughter makes a rotten egg bomb, I'll be as proud as heck.
Yeah, there you go.
What the heck, you know? But, the stress, you know, I talk about a lot of time, the stress on young people. They get these 5 credit card offers every week at 18 years old on. They don't know how to handle it.
Well, the other come on is the credit card. It's 0% interest. You can buy this thing now and you don't pay any interest for 6 months.
Oh, that's the biggest scam of all.
Then at the end of 6 months, it's like 25% interest.
That furniture guy's on there all the time running those ads, Jordan or whatever his name is. Yeah. And he's like, no interest rate for 3 years on furniture. And I go, oh, my God, he's going to tie these people future revenues up and people. Young people out there and older people with kids and grandkids, tell them, pay cash. If you don't have the cash, you don't have to have it today.
Right.
Right?
Right. If you're going to borrow for the big things that you need, like a house. Or a car.
Right, exactly.
And then pay it down as quickly as you can. Right.
Even cars, I'll fight you on that because you can buy... You go in and you want to buy a brand new, say, Volvo station wagon. It's 40 grand or 45 grand. And you can buy one 3 or 4 years old for 18.
18, yes.
And put half down and pay the rest off in a year.
You know, or
just pay cash or whatever.
Yeah.
But on a house.
A house is hard.
House is hard. Yeah. But what I tell people is try to do a 15-year versus a 30-year.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, I know the payment's higher. That's the point. You won't overspend. And when the kids are heading off to college, you'll have full equity in your house. If you weren't a dumb and went to borrow and get lines of credit and refinance, or you rang up credit cards and then you're using the house equity
to pay off the credit cards
and everything else. In your practice, financial stress, do you see it a lot?
Well, yes, although it's not just wrapped around the holidays. I mean, and I think that finances often become a point of stress between partners, between spouses.
Right.
So it's so interesting. Usually, you know, opposites attract, right? That's not always true, but in some cases you have
they
one
attract
person.
Initially, repel eventually. Is that good? I like that.
That's good, Dennis.
Feel free to use it.
Attract initially, repel eventually. Or another way to say it is the thing that we found so endearing and attractive in the beginning is the very thing that may annoy us. And one of that is money. Yeah. So you meet someone and they're generous and they're lovely and they are extravagant and they take you to beautiful places or they buy you beautiful gifts. You get married and you're frugal.
Yeah.
Male or female, this isn't a gender thing. And one partner tends to be very fiscally conservative and the other one doesn't care. That becomes a point of stress.
What happens when two spenders marry each other?
They get into debt. They may be happy. And the same thing, if two frugal people get together, then it's true that if you're on the same page with respect to finances, that's not going to be a tremendous point of stress in the marriage.
Right.
And ideally, before you get married, you know, if I had my way, everyone would do a little bit of counseling with either a financial person or a therapist before they marry to talk about some of those basic things like how do you manage money? What is your attitude towards debt?
Right.
What is your long-term, do you even think about long-term finances? Some do, some don't.
Right.
and it would be helpful if people discuss that so that they entered the marriage knowing.
Yeah. I've had young couples come in the office, got themselves in a little bit of credit card problems.
Yeah.
I said, I look at both of them. Good kids. I mean, in their 20s, everything else. I look at both. I go, okay, who's going to be the grown-up here? Who's taking over and laying down the law?
Yeah.
And so...
Does it have to be only one? Could it be mutual?
I like to have a general. You have to have one person. Hoping for two-person conversion.
Yeah.
If there's genuine love and respect there, the other person will eventually, you know, fall in. But they don't want to do it.
Yeah.
So one person has to take responsibility for it, in my view. Yeah. You could argue it.
I do recommend that in a marriage that both partners know what this financial picture looks like. They know how much is coming in.
Right.
And they know how much is going out.
Exactly.
In general. And they know if they're behind or above. They're losing each month or they're gaining each month.
Right.
To have one person sort of being able to make the final decision.
Right.
So we're arguing about what kind of car to buy. And ultimately, the general.
Yeah.
Or the whomever.
Yeah, I think you have the one person day to day. But those big decisions maybe should be joint. But I don't know.
You mean like day to day grocery shopping?
Yeah, that type of stuff. Yeah. So. Thanks for listening. This is Retirement Life and Investing Show. We'll be back in a few minutes. If you like my Retirement 10 Commandments, go to my website, O'BrienRetired.com. Hit the magic button. We're happy to send that to you and start a conversation if you would like. Remember, at O'Brien Retirement, we don't care how much money you have. We care that you take care of your money. We'll be back in a few. Thank you. America to the Retirement Life and Investing Show on 94.9 News Now. And my name is Dennis O'Brien, president of O'Brien Retirement Investment Group, and I'm with Dr. Linda Vogel, a psychologist. And we are talking about money, families, holidays, and all that good stuff and what's going on out there. So Linda, let's talk about retirement a little bit. When people go to retire and one spouse has been home and the other spouse wants to come home and the dynamic and some of the things that they should talk about before the actual retirement happens. Or both are working and one retires and the other one's not too happy about it. You know, and stuff like that. Have you run across that in your practice?
Yeah, of course. And I think let's just focus when one person has been the homemaker, maybe working also, but has been essentially the manager of the household.
Right.
And the other person retires.
Right.
And so now you have two people living at home 24/7.
Right.
And that is where you can run into trouble if you haven't tried to negotiate it beforehand.
Right.
And one of the issues is if I've been running the home seven days a week, and now you've retired and you start telling me, no, don't do it this way, do it that way. I don't like this. I don't want that. I'm going to take over this part of the job. That can set up a lot of tension because I'm used to doing it my way. I don't need your input.
Right.
This also happens, incidentally, in military families where the military person has been out to sea for 6 months.
Right.
And the other partner is running the household, managing the kids. Yeah, the military person comes home and wants to take over.
Right.
And it can set up again some kind of tension, especially in retirement. So I think one issue there is to talk to each other ahead of time about, look, I've been doing the cooking for 27 years.
Right.
And I'd appreciate help, or I don't want help.
Right. Talk it out. Yeah.
And the other issue is if you're both in the house now 7 days a week, nobody's leaving to go to work, it can get... You get on each other's nerves in a way that you wouldn't have done when you were out of the house 6, 7, 8 hours a day.
Right.
And how do you handle that? A part of it, again, is trying to talk to each other. Right. So if you annoy me, can I sit down and say, hey, when you do that, it really makes me feel X, Y, and Z. Could we please not do that?
Right.
And the other person, of course, in the perfect world, doesn't get defensive
right.
and listens
right.
and says, okay, I'll try.
Right.
But the other thing to think about is activities outside the home.
Exactly.
That you can either do together
right.
and or things that you would do together and things that you would do separately.
Right.
And,
right.
and couples in retirement that have love to travel, for example, they right. can travel together, come home. They're in good place. But supposing you have one partner who hates to travel
right.
and the other one loves to travel, but the one who hates to travel doesn't want the partner to travel without him or her.
Right.
Now we have a problem.
Yes.
So, the simplistic solution would be, I don't want to oversimplify, but to try to talk to each other about where you're getting on each other's nerves
yeah.
and try to develop interests that are both things that you can do together, like couples who play golf together.
Right, right.
But also things that you can do separately. Mm-hmm. I have friends, actually, who retired and moved to Florida.
Right.
And he's a big golfer. And she was concerned about, what am I going to do in Florida? She had worked all her life, and
right.
she was retiring also. And what they've done is she's learned to play golf. And although she doesn't often play with him because he's better,
right.
she's out there, and they can join the league, and they have
social
couples
circle.
And friends.
Right.
But in addition, they both sought out extracurricular activities that are separate from each other.
Yeah, keep each other
yeah.
busy.
So
yeah.
she's like joined a bridge club. He has no interest in that. So she's developing friends that way.
Right.
So I just think you need to live your life. Just because you're retired doesn't mean you're suddenly glued at the hip and have to stay indoors all the time.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And I've seen the type that sit home and sit in the chair and go, I've worked all my life. I'm going to sit in this chair and leave me alone.
Yeah. And don't talk to me. Right.
And don't talk
right.
to me. That's not good.
That's not good.
That's not good.
No. And I actually knew someone who, when they turned 80, they said, well, and this is not a client. This is a relative, actually, who said, well, I'm 80 years old now. I'm done. And unfortunately, it led to some inactivity, which was not good for health, and
right.
it led to some depression and isolation.
Right.
And after a couple of years, with efforts on all the rest of the family, the person sort of reawakened and said, no, just because I'm 82 doesn't mean I can't do anything.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I think, too, what would help a lot of couples is I see a lot of couples as sports parents we grew up with, their kids, our kids, and
yeah.
stuff. And the kids leave the nest, and when the baby's finally gone, a lot yeah. of them are getting divorced.
Isn't that what they call the gray divorce?
Is that the gray divorce?
Yeah,
I'm not up on
yeah.
on that. But I've talked to a few of them. They've come in, and we just chat away. And I've come to the conclusion that when the youngest baby leaves,
yeah.
all right, you're
yeah.
still, and you're looking at each other going, now what?
Who is this person?
or oh, my God, I have nothing to distract me. Then I think what you need to do
that's sad.
Is you need to go for a 2-mile walk every day.
With each other.
With each other.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
And guess what happens when you walk?
You talk.
You talk. And guess what happens when you talk?
You reconnect.
You reconnect.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden,
yeah. Yeah.
it's going to be okay.
Yes. Yeah.
So my advice to couples who have the empty nest syndrome is walk
every day.
Two miles
nice.
Every day. I know it's simplistic.
Well,
I know.
Sometimes simple solutions are wise.
It doesn't involve any drugs, pharmaceuticals, or prescriptions,
right.
and everything else.
And if you just go to the movies, you're not talking, right?
Exactly, exactly. So,
actually, I would give that same suggestion to couples who have children. I think one of the things that happens, you meet, you marry, you've got a connection.
Right.
You have kids, and you become kid-focused, which
right.
is fine.
Right.
But if you become kid-focused to the exclusion of your partner, little by little, you lose that connection.
Right.
So we therapists will often suggest to couples that they really take at least one day a week or one evening a week or
right.
one morning a week where they do something, a 2-mile walk,
right.
that involves just them, no kids,
right.
get a babysitter, hopefully, use family members,
right.
and go and do something together. So
just reconnect. Talk.
Yeah, talk. You could. Movies are fine as long as afterwards you talk about the movie. You can't just go to a movie and go home because then
honey,
you have
it. Did you like that movie? Yeah, not really.
Why not? And that brings us to, can you discuss? I like one kind of movie, you like another kind
of
movie.
Yeah,
okay, I'll
yeah.
go with you to yours, you'll go with me to mine. Yeah,
yeah. She likes scary movies,
yeah.
and I'm like, not really.
Not really.
I get up and run, My imagination just, goes into overtime and everything else. So, yeah, it's interesting. It's I see a lot of different cases, and I try to give advice, but at the same time, sometimes they need a pro like you just to formalize the discussion.
Well, because it's easy for us to say walk and talk, but it's not so easy for people to do that. And right. if you haven't talked to each other in a while,
yeah.
or if there are points of argument between you and right. you can't talk about them.
Right.
And that brings us back to the holidays. I mean, how do you handle everybody else? So you're, Christmas or Hanukkah's coming. You have all the in-laws coming. You may have multiple generations from babies to great-grandmas.
Right.
And there's bound to be points of argument, especially if one partner doesn't really want all those people.
Because they're cooking.
Or they're cooking and cleaning and being nuts about the house should look perfect. And
perfect. And that's the worst. That word should be banned from the holiday lexicon.
Oh, absolutely.
Perfect.
Absolutely.
Please. I want a big, messy, loud.
A big, messy,
loud Christmas.
And lots of space so that if Aunt Josephine is saying things that you find offensive, you kind of take a breath and let it go because it's only one day of the year.
Exactly.
And you don't have to solve all the social political problems on Hanukkah Eve or Christmas, on the eighth day of Hanukkah or Christmas Eve or Christmas Day.
And no politics.
Well, I think no politics. Yes, I think
no
that's
politics.
Probably
let
a
it
good
go.
Discussion.
Let it go. Let no it politics. Go.
If you want to, you know, if you really want to have a conversation with somebody about politics, wait until afterwards and when there are not 25 people around.
Yeah, it'll be big and messy, all right. Right. No worries there. Oh, my God, everything else.
And I do think that that's part of the stress at Christmas, too, or Christmas and or Hanukkah, or any of the big celebrations where they should be celebratory and we should have fun. Because we don't have that many rituals in our culture.
No, we really don't.
And it would be nice if they could. But you have to give each other elbow room to be different. You have to lower your expectations of perfection.
Yes.
You want to keep the money piece under control so you're not worrying.
Exactly. Exactly.
And then try to enjoy it.
Yeah.
As best you can. And there'll always be one relative who might be a thorn in your side.
Well, there's always one. Come on.
At least.
At least. I'm sure you're ticking someone off in your family, too. I count on it. But this is Dennis O'Brien, and I'm with Dr. Linda Vogel, a psychologist and mystic. And she hasn't analyzed me yet, but hold on. It may still happen. But thanks for listening. We'll be back in a few. And if you'd like to call in with your problems or notes, please call in to 860-464-9490. We'll be back in a few. Thanks. Bye-bye. To the Retirement Life and Investing Show with Dr. Linda Vogel, a psychologist. This is Dennis O'Brien. Linda just asked me, you do this every week? And I said, yeah, I kind of like it, actually, you know, so.
It's fun.
Yeah, it's, I, you know, to me, it's like.
What happens when you travel? Then you don't do it. Or do you have it pre-recorded?
What I do is I just go, Chris, I go pick out a show you liked and Chris just runs
okay.
it. People don't.
Yeah.
I don't even think people notice, but I like doing it. I like staying current. It forces a different discipline on me in terms of relating, not just doing it, but talking about stories. Speaking of stories, I had another Social Security story. Linda, listen to this one. Client calls me to tell me that her ex called. Now, she's 63, was married 16 years, been divorced many years, okay? Her ex called and told her that she should file under him for Social Security because he just turned 68. And I think his normal retirement age is 66, I think. But she should call Social Security and check. This is her ex, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Now, she calls me, and I'm stunned to learn that her ex had turned his life around. Because what she had told me was she paid for his education. He was, you know, partier, no good. You know, it's like a blues song, right?
Yes.
So I never went down that road with her because I just figured, well, he has nothing to do with her and everything else. lo and behold, he turned his life around. He's 68. He's making $200,000 a year. He remarried, has a 9 and 11-year-old.
Oh, wow.
She loved telling me that, by the way.
I bet.
But his Social Security is actually sizable, and she might be eligible for back payments because his FRA age, depending on what they say and everything else. And I told her, you call Social Security as soon as possible, make an appointment, go in, discuss your 63-year-old rights, because she's still working.
Yeah.
And I told her to hold off because she'll get more and more, right?
Yeah, on, of her own.
Right.
Yeah.
Social Security optimization strategy. Yeah. Wait, right?
Right.
So I told her, and I said, listen, you got to go because you may be owed back divorcee payments from his FRA, his full retirement age, that you could have claimed had you known. And they may pay you those back payments, too.
Would it go back to the date of the divorce or back to when he started, when he was eligible?
FRA, that's the full retirement age. It's different from everybody. Sometimes it's 65, right. And now we're in the 66, 66 and a half, 67, depending on the year you were born. So I'm saying if his FRA was 66 and now he's 68,
she
might have had rights. And we got to check this, but she may have read rights to his...
For the past 2 years.
For the past 2 years.
Yeah.
So I told her, go in there right away and find out.
Would she get his full amount or half?
Half.
Okay.
Half. But if she was collecting and her part was more than his,
then
she wouldn't bother taking his.
Yes.
But if she didn't claim yet on her own, she may have the right to his, going back to his FRA.
Right.
And that's what I suspect, but I want her to go to Social Security and hear it from them, the source itself.
That was a very good-hearted thing for her ex to do.
Yes, it was a very good-hearted thing to do. And I said, were you shocked when he did that? She goes, you know what? She goes, if it wasn't for him and all the hard times we had, I wouldn't have my two sons.
Okay.
So, and now I wouldn't have my granddaughter.
Right.
So he goes, you know what?
Yeah.
Despite all that, and sometimes I could ring around the neck when I go back down memory lane, I remind myself of the good, of the good and everything else. My mistake was not asking about her ex, who she did not like to talk about, and left the impression that he was a very low achiever.
Yeah.
All right?
Yeah.
Never assume.
Right. Never assume. Exactly.
Right? So now I've been doing this almost 39 years. And guess what? An ex turned his life around, and I probably might have asked sooner, but...
Had you known, but as it turns, I wonder if she...
I don't think she ever wanted to talk about him, so I didn't...
So you didn't talk about
him. Why would I go down that road? But I was surprised.
Yeah.
You know, so.
And she didn't know about the Social Security rule, and you wouldn't have thought about it.
No, because I just thought, well, he was, you know, drinking in some bar somewhere and living off $1,200 Social Security minimum payment.
Right, right.
So I didn't know he'd gotten married, his kids, he's motivated, he's probably got this young wife, whatever, you know.
Good. That is a nice story in that he turned his life around and that he was generous enough
to call
his ex and say, hey, you earned this, basically.
Yeah, I thought that was pretty cool, actually. You know, so maybe he's making amends as he gets older.
That's what I'm thinking, that he's making an amend.
Is that what happens when people get older?
Not always, don't you wish.
You just pierced my balloon.
You mean everybody as they get older gets wiser? Right. I don't know. I think you have to work a little bit at that.
Yeah. Also, another man called me this week. He wanted to come in. And I think he's far from retiring, but his daughters are in their 20s and starting their life. And he wanted me to meet his daughters and get them on the right road initially and everything else.
That's
an act of love.
Yes.
You know,
that's a gift.
I want you to talk to a third party. Here's everything else. And I tell everybody on the show, I don't care if I can help anybody get on that right road. This is how you should do things. Call me anytime as a resource.
Right.
The man took me up on it.
Yeah.
I was like, this is really cool. You know,
so very nice act for his kids.
Yeah. So it's like, you know, it's nice to hear these stories, you know, these acts of
generosity.
Of generosity and stuff like that. This morning I ran into a Federal Navy law enforcement officer who's going to retire, he said, in the next year. He said he needs to make an appointment because he doesn't want to make a mistake. He will find, I'm sure, I'm looking forward to working with him. And I'm happy that he wants to get some advice and talk first and see if we can work together. So a lot of times it's a feeling out process, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes you just, there's some people,
it doesn't
you
connect.
Don't click.
Right.
Do you have that happen where someone comes in and you go, I don't think I'm the right person for you.
Well, sir, it's a complicated question. I do a fair amount of talking on a phone first.
Right.
And so if
pre-screen.
It's not exactly, but I do want to get a sense if I can be useful. So if it's a situation where I really feel that that's either I can't or I don't want to get involved,
right.
My goal would be to help that person or that party
right.
find somebody else.
Find someone else that's better suited right. for that.
Or who, and also all of us, we only have a certain number of hours in the day. We may not have late hours. We may not have early hours.
Right.
There can be insurance issues.
Right.
So I try to screen that so that I'm not wasting their time to have them come meet me and then say, gee, I'm sorry, I can't work
right,
with you.
Right, right, right. That comes with experience.
Yeah. So, but if once in a while I always suggest to people to shop around like you would with any other.
Right.
Come meet with me, meet with another therapist, because it's up to you, the client, to find what feels most comfortable to you, where you feel
right.
where you feel like you will be able to do the work that you want to do.
Exactly.
So there is that process as well.
Yeah, yeah. Just to switch gears a little bit, once in a while, I have to yell at someone who's putting on debt in their 60s, big
mm-hmm.
debts. And most of you have followed the Retirement Ten Commandments and have all your debt paid off by the time you retire. But many of you like to keep working because you don't want to sit around the house, mm-hmm. keep getting on your spouse's nerves. And we all need our space and make sure that if you were going 100 miles an hour in your working life,
mm-hmm.
that you have a plan to gradually slow down,
mm-hmm.
whether it be a part-time gig,
mm-hmm.
working, volunteering in the schools or a nonprofit. Do you agree with that?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I think one of the things that happens at some point between 60 and 70 or whatever is you begin to slow down without fully realizing it.
Right.
So I've worked with people who might be 62, 65, and they're still working, the
yeah.
full career.
Right.
60-hour week, 40-hour week. But then you can't continue at that level. And
right.
if you begin to recognize, okay, I don't need to do quite so much. I can withdraw from this project.
Right.
I don't have to take on that project. And it's sort of taper down so right. that when you do actually retire, maybe not until 75,
right.
you haven't been going 100 miles an hour and then zero.
Exactly.
You've been slowly tapering down, developing outside interests, reconnecting with your spouse. If you can
going
do,
for
if you,
walks.
Yeah, yeah, going for walks. If you have that option. I mean, not everybody does. Some
yeah.
people, they work full-time and then they're done.
Yeah, right.
And that can be a harder transition.
I've noticed, too, especially joining BNI and networking out there with different business owners, that some retirees actually start their own businesses.
Yeah.
Most of them seem very happy to control their time and have some extra
yeah.
spending money.
So or taking some kind of small... I had a friend who... after her career was over, started working as a cashier at one of the local stores.
Yeah.
And it was great. She worked, two or three days a week.
Had
a little
party.
Money. And
Yeah. Had coworkers and
she liked it.
Things,
she learned how to use the automatic, the computerized cash registers.
Yeah. Yeah. I have a friend of mine, and his dream is to get a truck and one of those Airstreams
uh-huh.
and check out the open road, stuff like that. I don't know if he's talked the wife into it yet. But with technology and computers, work's mobile these days.
Absolutely.
So if you want
to
go all over you can literally do it.
Yeah.
If
you
know.
Have a place where you can work remotely.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. So, it's just amazing what goes on out there. One tip for everybody. I was reading in the journal today, there was an article, how tech will help healthcare. This is wild. Some of the stuff that's going on. Gary Shapiro, he's watched the medical community use new technology to make advances in everything from diet to disease. He says sensors will help doctors. Probably with a lot of subjective analysis, a lot of doctors are they're going to be using more and more tiny sensors to activate. Do you know that somebody said the Apple Watch now can detect disruptions in your heart rate?
Well, I knew that you can look at your heart rate, you can look at your sleep activity and your physical activity. I did not know that it could sense disruptions, but I wouldn't be surprised.
No, that's coming. These sensors are going to be there and everything else. And now artificial intelligence is very good at detecting patterns.
Yes.
So now a couple of doctors put 130,000 skin disease images and created an algorithm to diagnose skin cancer. So this technology is coming. Whether you Like it or not, I know you're giving me that look like, yeah,
no,
right.
No, I think it's, I mean, like everything else in human history, the invention is has great potential for good and positive, but unfortunately it can be misused, as we know from Facebook. And
yeah, and the last one is Alexa is helping people with dementia.
How so?
Because it's forwarded people losing their memory. They can ask Alexa anything and get the answer instantly. Talk about Big Brother. But this is stuff that's coming, and I wanted just to touch base and say, you know, everything else. Hey, everybody, thanks for listening. Thank you, Dr. Linda, for coming on. This is Dr. Linda Vogel, and if you'd like to make an appointment with her, look her up. She's in Mystic. She's probably booked, but a nicer person you won't meet. So in any case, thanks for listening. If you like my Retirement Ten Commandments, go to www.obrienretire. Hit the magic button, and you can make an appointment, too, or ask me anything. We'll talk to you soon. Have a great week, and dress warm. Bye-bye.